Welcome into the Husker 24/7 podcast. I am Mike Schaefer, joined by Michael Brunch, Brian Christofferson here on this Tuesday morning. Gentlemen, the spring season is over. It is done. We can put it to bed. But did we learn anything? We'll start with Brian Christofferson. Give me one thing that you learned this spring while covering Nebraska spring football.
I'll start with the big kahuna right off the bat. I mean, Omar Manning, we didn't know how involved he was going to be, after last season. And he trots out there with the top unit at wide receiver Saturday. I mean, he was out there with Toure, who has sort of been what they've hoped. And Oliver Martin has had a huge spring. And those were your top three guys with the one offense in the first half. Now, they'll have to – I mean, they're going to have to hold down the fort. There's some other guys who are going to challenge. And Xavier Betts sort of disappeared from the action Saturday, but I would still like to think someone like him would have a say. And, that receiver group as a whole, I think by the end of the spring, bought into what the coaches are believing about it. And I'm bullish on that, the talent in that group.
All right, Brunts, BC learned about the receiver talent, or maybe we should say it was reiterated that they had talent. The room is deeper. What was one thing you learned this spring?
I think I learned that the position battle at running back is still wide open. I think that because of guys not being able to practice at various points, and the fact that I think he's also very talented, I think that Gabe Irvin put himself very firmly in the mix at the running back spot. But, I don't think that we achieved any clarity for who's going to be the first guy out there. I believe it will be Marquise Stepp, but the kind of horse race behind him for that starting job is still very much ongoing. So, the way that group looks at the start of fall camp will be fascinating, because I think that's a group that I could see somebody potentially entering the transfer portal just because there's so many options there. So I learned that, that will be ongoing. And we'll kind of pick that up, I guess, in August to see where things are at there.
Yeah, I would say that I learned, or it was reiterated, that Nebraska has developed quite a bit of depth on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, they have some guys that will be backing up some of their key starters that you can feel pretty good about the direction things are going. It kind of speaks to the adage of get old, stay old. And it feels like they're going to be able to do that in some of those spots. You know that they're pretty excited about Nash Hutmacher, and he had a good performance on Saturday. You know, I'm still looking forward to seeing Mosai Newsome emerge a little bit from that defensive line group. Roquan Buckley is a freshman coming on strong along the defensive line. And then at linebacker, you have guys like Isaac Gifford and Javen Wright and Jamari Butler, Blaze Gunnarsson at outside linebacker. Inside linebacker is going to be a little bit more interesting, especially with whatever ends up happening with Will Honus. But Nebraska's got some guys there. Etuvimalga Clements looks a little bit more comfortable here in his second season. That could help in terms of depth behind those big three of Kolarovic and Reimer, Henrich. And then Garrett Snodgrass. And of course, you have a host of freshmen that are coming in to play inside linebacker as well. So you like the depth at the second level. And then in the secondary, Quentin Newsome and Cam Taylor Britt make a nice 1-2 punch. Braxton Clark had a great play on a ball that Adrian Martinez threw in the first half on Saturday, and people shouldn't forget about him. And then you're going to try to develop that fourth cornerback, whether it's Lineham, whether it's one of the new guys coming in Buford when he gets healthy, or Malik Williams. And then behind the two older safeties, you have Miles Farmer and Noah Pola-Gates. And then behind those guys, you're going to hope to kind of develop a little bit more as well. But I think overall, you have to feel pretty good about Nebraska's defense in terms of collecting talent, developing those guys. And then, of course, you have a very veteran group that's going to give way to 2022. You're going to get a lot of guys that are going to get opportunity, but they put themselves in a position where they're on the right development track. So I think if you're looking for something on the defensive side of the ball, you have to feel pretty good about where that depth sits right now. Let's switch it up a little bit. So we talked about what we learned. What question do you still have coming out of the spring? We'll switch the order up a little bit. Let's go Michael Bruns here.
Well, I mean, the running back's the biggest one to me.
Bruns is just going to go all in on that.
Yeah, I'm going to continue to have the same answer. no, I mean, I think, you know, we still don't know, you know, and it's hard to know from spring, I guess, what the special teams picture looks like. I mean, you obviously have Connor Culp at the kicking spot and feel good about that. But I mean, you I believe have a position battle at punter with Pristup and Crawford and Dana Cherney and a lot of guys there. But I mean, we don't really know that Nebraska is going to be better personnel wise there. We've heard all spring that there is much more of a emphasis in practice, more focus on, you know, getting starters and defenders on coverage units and really hammering home how important that is. We'll see if that translates to the fall. I mean, you can't really know that stuff until you actually are playing a different opponent, I think, but it seems that the emphasis is there, which I think is an important part because it very much seemed like an afterthought at times in the past couple of years. And that's a group that has to be better if Nebraska is going to make measurable progress this year. And as a group that if you can make progress there, I think that can win you a game or two. So we'll see if that gets sorted out as they go into the fall, but we just don't know, I guess, where things are at and if Nebraska can finally improve from what's been a really kind of piss poor run at special teams the last couple of years.
DC?
I guess who's the number two quarterback is. Harburg has made it very interesting. And I would dare say in the brief glimpses we've had, I've sort of been a little more impressed with him. That's not completely fair, because it has been such limited viewing. And I know Logan Smothers had a really good scrimmage we didn't see. And to Logan's credit, Saturday was really disjointed for him. And I think it should be pointed out. Like, he got the first series and really didn't have a say in it. And he got one more series in the third quarter where he wasn't a big part of it. And then, so he had like all of 7 or 8 snaps by the time we got to the fourth quarter. And it felt like he wasn't really part of the day. And then he actually really – he got going a little bit. He completed 4 in a row, and I think like 7 of his last 10 or something. So he actually finished okay. But that said, Harburg, to me, there's a lot in that toolbox, maybe even more than I thought when he came in January. And so I'm really interested where they – when they put out a depth chart, if they do, the week of the Illinois game, who's next after Martinez – and, you know, if it's basically even in the coach's eyes, or if they feel like Smothers still has a little bit more command of his knowledge of things, does he just get the benefit of the doubt because he has an extra year? You know, that's I don't know. But what we do know is it doesn't seem like they're going to go after another quarterback, which I think is in part because Harburg had a pretty good spring and gives them some optimism about what he can get done in the future.
You know, it's interesting because no one's eligibility move. Both Smothers and Harburg are eligible for a redshirt year.
Yeah.
In 2021. And so they're actually the same.
They are
on the eligibility track. So keep that in mind as you're thinking about things moving forward. A question that's just going to remain for me, Nebraska's offense, The biggest difference for me on Saturday was that you had some receivers that allowed you to do some different things with that offense, but they still had a lot of the same kind of stuff that you saw before. You got a lot of quarterback draw on third and long. You got a lot of swing passes that weren't particularly accurate. And that's including the guy in Adrian Martinez that's going to be your starter. So the question I have is the offense going to look dramatically different than what they called on the field last year? Because if the answer is no, then you're putting a lot of faith in that those wide receivers alone are going to be able to flip what was a pretty stagnant group that struggled to get yards, struggled to get chunk plays. They still didn't look particularly explosive on Saturday. You had a long of 40 on the last play of the game. And then before that, a 39 yard from Marvin Scott, but then you had 2 or 3 other plays in the 20s and the rest were short of it. So I still think it's fair to wonder if this offense is remotely close to being explosive, because I don't think we saw it on Saturday. And I just don't know if it is. You know, some of it is quarterback run game in a day in which you're doing a thud period makes it really hard. But I just don't know why I would expect the offense to look a whole lot different, regardless of who's at running back, unless you expect the wide receivers to really dramatically change what Adrian Martinez can do in terms of pushing the ball downfield. So I'm still pretty skeptical of the offensive unit's ability to put up points, even though I think individual position wise, they might be better in a lot of areas than they were in 2020. We have any other thoughts from the game on Saturday? Any individualized thoughts? Any players you want to talk about? BC?
Yeah, sure. I thought Blaze Gunnarsson was a good reserve guy. I mean, he beat Corcoran for a sack on a play. He was very active, and he just moved so well with his frame. So I think people who were like sort of wondering, you know, what's up with Gunnarsson? He sort of had this injury history. Is he past it? How does he move after all that? Very well. Like he had a really good day, and yeah, he's not necessarily going to be one of your top line guys this year, but you know, I think Jamari Butler got credited for a sack too. The Smothers or somebody kind of ran into him, but he still got it. But yeah, I like Gunnarsson a lot. I love the young defensive linemen. I think they got some guys who are in a year or two you can be excited about. That's Huttmacher, that's Marquise Black, Roquan Buckley, who's not even 18 years old yet. The beauty of what they have right now on defense is that you have guys who don't have to be thrown into the mix, like DeAndre Thomas was 4 years ago, where he shouldn't have been starting yet, but was, you know, playing big snaps against Oregon as a true freshman. They don't have to do that in this case with these guys, and they have time to develop behind the scenes and then emerge in a year or two. But I thought those guys on the D line did some good stuff.
Brunch, anything else?
Yeah. I mean, I think the value of that scrimmage, especially with the way they set it up, I think BC is right. I mean, you couldn't see a ton in the first half because you didn't really have tackling. In the second half, I mean, you got a really good glance at, you know, some of the young guys that, you know, you kind of always get asked about with like, hey, how's this guy coming along, or how's this guy looking? And, you know, I think, you know, a couple guys that stood out to me, I think Gunnarsson is one. I think BC's absolutely right that, you know, he looks the part. And I think in the open practice we saw too, he was moving around pretty well with the lower groups. So, I mean, he's a guy down the stretch or a couple of years from now, I think is going to be a guy that has potential to help Nebraska. You know, beyond that, you know, I think, you know, I was interested in seeing Sevion Morrison. That was kind of the first glance at him. I thought he ran okay. And, you know, I just think, you know, the defense, kind of going back to what Schaefer was saying in the first question, I think, you know, you have a lot of guys in that group that would probably be helping you this year if it were a normal year and you had guys moving on and kind of doing their normal graduation thing. I mean, like a Nopola Gates, he had a pretty good game, I think, which, you know, was good to see, but he's kind of buried behind Dismuke and Deontay Williams. So, you know, I think the future is bright on that side of the ball. It'll be interesting, I think, too, if some of those guys can work their way into some kind of rotation. I mean, you saw that a little bit last year with Miles Farmer. You know, maybe he does that again, maybe Pola Gates or, you know, one of the young corners forces some kind of, you know, rotation, I guess, with like a Quentin Newsome. But it is striking, I think, how much Nebraska's overhauled certain positions on defense. I think that's a good sign for the future.
Yeah. I want to kind of mention a couple of the guys on offense that jumped out. I mean, Sevion Morrison, it was just good to see him play, and Marvin Scott had a good day. I mean, I thought the running backs were pretty interesting, even if I don't know what to make of that group as a whole. And I don't know that we know who the guy is going to get the lion's share of things, or if they're going to have a guy, if we're looking at another year in which they try to find the hot hand and completely guess when it's going to be right to have the right guy in the right situation. But, you know, whether it was Yant against the defense that he proved that, you know, he's a pretty powerful guy. There's been a lot of talk of him this spring, and he had a nice second half when he was able to play, and certainly someone that benefits when you have to actually bring somebody to the ground versus more of the two-hand touch method. And then I thought, and I always kind of think this, whenever Ronald Tompkins gets into a game, he always seems like he's someone that's going to be interesting. And if he can just stay healthy, I think he could be kind of fun to watch with that running back room. But, you know, between Scott, Morrison, Tompkins, Yant, those guys all did well. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Harris had a nice long run. So they played pretty well. I don't know what to make of them as a whole, but they were better than I think people might have expected given kind of the doom and gloom coming in. And so that's good. And then also, we haven't really talked about this unit at all, but the offensive line, I mean, they had a fine day. Again, hard to judge when you don't have full contact with that first period. And that's when a lot of your starters and your guys would have been playing in. But that's a unit that has to make a good-sized jump for Nebraska to be better offensively. And they're young, but they've got guys with plenty of experience. I mean, you have starters in Piper, Juergens, and Benhart, who started at least eight or more games in Big Ten play. You've got Turner Corcoran, there's a highly ranked guy that had his one start against Rutgers. And then we'll see what they end up doing, whether it's Sichterman or somebody else at that right guard spot. But I think that offensive line is going to be pretty important for them overall. But that's the kind of stuff that I noticed on the offensive side of the ball. Heinrich Harburg had an interesting day. He wasn't completely accurate, but you can, as Brian said, you can certainly see the tools. You can see why Nebraska recruited him. I think that's kind of important too, because a lot was made down the stretch of, well, they're taking this guy over Cole Payton, and you can see, you get him out there and you let him play. I mean, he's got a lot of work he has to do, especially on his footwork, but he is blessed with an arm that is, I think, already the biggest in Nebraska's quarterback room. And I don't know that they've had a lot of arms like that. And so if he can get a little bit more accurate and certainly get his footwork in sync with the rest of his body, I think he's going to be a lot of fun moving forward.
His last throw to Lever, I saw an over the top camera view of it. And it was actually a pretty darn good throw. I mean, considering the wind factor and where he anticipated Lever being on the play, and he just dropped it right in there. It was actually kind of a beauty.
Yeah. I mean, well, and then the perfect amount of touch to not float that thing too far to where someone can intercept it, or you're hanging your receiver out to dry. We were talking before the show, and Brunts mentioned he had a really nice throw that Will Nixon had that one-handed catch on along the sidelines. And so I think there's a lot to work with Harburg, and I'm not trying to move past Logan Smothers, who had himself a solid day as well too. And I don't think that answer, you know, as BC said, I don't think we have that answer yet, but I just thought it was good for Harburg to kind of prove like, hey, I've got this stuff. I'm raw. I need to be developed, but there's a reason why Nebraska chose me over Cole Payton. And, you know, we're pretty darn excited about it. So I thought that was a big takeaway that I had for the weekend. Should we take a break and come back, talk a little recruiting? I know Brunts and I have been catching up with some of the guys that have been here on campus. It's a big visit weekend. Nebraska had 20 guys that had offers, in addition to several others that made it. They got to see Memorial Stadium, a lot of people first time on campus. Let's take a break. I'm taking it out of your hands. I'm making an executive decision.
Cool.
Taking a break. We're going to come back and dive into that. Brunts, did you want to say something there?
No, I was just hacking for a minute. So I think a break is a good idea.
All right. Well, you can hack it up during the break, and then we'll come back, and we need you to be a professional. Is that okay? He left us. So we'll come back. We'll dive into some recruiting next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right. So Nebraska had a pretty sizable visit list on Saturday, and we posted it on Husker 24/7. And I think they had a couple other guys that showed up that maybe they hadn't expected. But overall, good stuff from them. Brunts, you've talked with several people. Where do you want to start with this? I mean, you can, anybody that you talked with that you thought something interesting occurred or they really enjoyed it, just leave it open-ended. We'll bounce back and forth. Somebody you talked with, somebody I talked with.
Yeah. So one kind of interesting interview I had was with Landon Sampson, the wide receiver out of Texas, out of South Lake Carroll. Kind of a theme that I've noticed between a lot of these interviews and talking to recruits this year is the volume of communication that is taking place on Nebraska's end and the number of coaches and staffers who are responsible for that communication, I think is kind of striking when you talk to guys. And Landon Sampson was a good example of this, where you have your position coach and Matt Lubick, who's talking to him. He's a wide receiver. You've got Ryan Held, who kind of recruits the state of Texas, talking to him. Scott Frost is also very involved. And Landon Sampson's hearing from a Nebraska coach or multiple coaches every single day. And that's, I think, pretty unique in the way that Nebraska's approaching things. And it wasn't just him. I heard that from other recruits that we talked to this week as well, that it really is kind of all hands on deck and just, you know, aggressive recruiting in that way, which I think you kind of have to do to cut through the noise in a pandemic. But the other thing that kind of stood out with Landon Sampson, obviously Nebraska could not have coaches meet with prospects because it is still a dead period until June 1st. They kind of encouraged, I guess, Landon to have dinner with Will Nixon. Which I thought was interesting. They didn't really know each other. They played some 7-on-7 against each other when Landon was younger in high school. But that was kind of a way to, you know, if you couldn't talk to the coaches, at least you were talking to somebody in the program and kind of getting that player's perspective on what, you know, it's like being at Nebraska. I think he found a lot of value in that. I'm not sure if that was the case with other prospects that were in town. I know it's kind of tough because guys are in and out of town quickly, but I thought that was kind of a shrewd move, at least on Nebraska's part, to kind of make that introduction to kind of have a little bit of a personal connection. And the other thing I'll say too, and before you get into guys you talk to, but the guys that, a lot of the guys that were in town, especially the guys with offers, they're coming back in a month. for official visits. So I think that bodes really well for Nebraska and hoping to kind of get some momentum going on the recruiting trail as things open up in June and guys get a little bit closer to making decisions.
Yeah, I've talked with a few different guys so far and looking to catch up with more and as the week kind of goes forward. But I do want to say quickly on Landon Sampson, Nebraska would not mind if that one moves very fast. Like I think they have their eye on either he or Grant Page, and it's very much a, you know, if guy wants in, other guys out. And I think that has been effectively kind of communicated to a degree. And so certainly we keep an eye on those two wide receivers. Both were in this weekend. Pretty sure Brunt's talked to both of them. So we'll see what Grant Page had to say when we get back to him. But I just wanted to mention that. So the wide receiver room in particular, I think that they're trying to move quick. They have Victor Jones Jr., who they like quite a bit. And I think they just want one other guy. So I talked with Jaron Kanick, and it was a good conversation. I think Nebraska fans should feel pretty good about a couple things. One, he loved the stadium. I mean, he absolutely really liked the atmosphere. He thought it was, he felt like it was big time. It was a place for big time football. And more than that, he could visualize himself in that space wearing the Nebraska uniform. And so he came away pretty positive about just the stadium experience and being able to kind of put an eyeball on what the future would look like. And I know that he's very much looking forward to returning to Nebraska because he gets to finally meet the coaches. And I know that's going to be a big thing both for him and for the staff. But just a visualization that he walked away with over the weekend is really good. A couple other things. He met up with Ernest Hausman. Both he, Gavin Myers, met up with Hausman at the concession stand. I don't know if they bought a Runza or not, but they spent a little time together, and he walked away with a pretty good impression of Ernest. And I think that Hausman's going to be pretty valuable for Nebraska, especially because they can't, you know, the coaches couldn't meet, but he was able to talk with some other recruits and really can kind of convey what it is that he liked about Nebraska. And he's in an interesting recruiting position because he had at this point in time, I think more Power Five offers than either Kanick or Myers. And so they're pretty curious, you know, why did you decide to shut it down so quickly? What was it about Nebraska that made you feel the way that you did? And you know, Kanick also was just impressed because he felt like they spent a little time talking recruiting, talking Nebraska, but a lot of it was just getting to know each other. And he said that he immediately felt comfortable with Ernest. Like that was a guy that he could definitely see wanting to have as a teammate in the future. And so I thought that was a good sign. And then maybe the most important thing, the Kanick family and the Myers family traveled for this trip together. Those two guys are really close. And everyone who has ever listened to me or has, you know, read stuff on our site knows that I don't believe in package deals. And I still don't necessarily think that this is one of those. But Nebraska is in really good shape with Gavin Myers. And the idea of those two playing together in college is appealing not just to them, but also their families that are really close. And so I think that's a good sign as well. All that being said, Brent Venables and Clemson are certainly looming. He's going to go the first day that he can visit. He's going to go out to Clemson. If he leaves with an offer, that's going to throw a wrench into things. And then he's going to go visit Nebraska for that 4th through the 6th weekend. And so it's going to be, you know, a huge week for him right at the start. And then of course, Kansas State is looming, and I wouldn't rule out the Wildcats by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that Nebraska is maybe edged a little bit in front of them, but the Clemson Tigers are certainly going to be a team to keep an eye on, and Iowa is involved as well. So Jaron Kanick is going to have a huge month of June. Both he and Gavin have basically said they're not doing anything before the next visit period. So it really feels like we're in a bit of a holding pattern until that first week of June with one of Nebraska's big targets in the Midwest.
Mike Schaefer, heard it here first, all about the package deals.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. But those guys are really close, and their family's close. And I just think that's a bonus that Nebraska has that nobody else really gets to match at this point in time. Grant Page, what did you learn there?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, Nebraska's in a good spot. He's going to take visits. Another Kansas State-Nebraska showdown. Those are the only two visits he has locked in right now.
Is Iowa State out?
he didn't really talk about him that much. So
I think that's a good sign for Nebraska there.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how things kind of break down with you know, Landon Sampson and Page and kind of that last spot. I think he really liked what he saw in Lincoln. You know, he's another guy that's kind of getting, you know, recruited by a number of different Nebraska coaches. And it's funny. I mean, I think a lot of these 22 guys have been talking to these coaches for months. They've been doing virtual visits. And a lot of these guys want to have decisions made, you know, before the start of their senior season. So it's going to be a lot of kind of quick decision-making on the part of these guys. But Page is coming in the weekend of June 11th, and Sampson's coming in June 4th. So how that breaks out will be telling, I think. But, you know, he liked everything he saw, kind of the same thing of really liking the facilities and what he was able to see, and then also just the atmosphere. So that you know, I think that Nebraska is going to get a very good second wide receiver. It's just a matter of, like you said, kind of who wants in first.
Yeah. Quickly with Gavin Myers, because a lot of it's similar with Jaron Kanick. I mean, he loved it. He came out here, really liked what he saw. He's coming back June 4th through the 6th. He also, same thing. I mean, loved just being able to be at a game and watching the linebackers play. He also really hit it off with Hausman, which those two guys could end up at the same position. Jaron Kanick could end up as an inside linebacker as well. I'd say that's least likely. And if I had a guess right now, I think Nebraska's looking at him as a wide receiver first and then defense second, which is a little bit of a departure from where they were at maybe last month. But that doesn't affect their kind of wide receiver numbers, because if they can get Jaron Kanick, it's also just like, let him get here and then we'll figure it out later. So that's, you know, that's basically kind of the situation with Gavin Myers. Again, feel really good about Nebraska, feel good about their recruitment of him. And I think that one is going to end up positive here that first weekend in June. I don't know if he'll get to a Kansas State visit. Maybe he does, but I suspect I don't think Kansas State wants him near as much as Nebraska does. And I think that kind of changes the direction of what he might do and where he might go. So, Brunch, you want to hit on Reese Mooney, and I can talk about Austin Terry and Ernest Hausman, and we'll finish this thing up.
Yes. So Nebraska had a couple quarterbacks on campus. Reese Mooney, the 2023 quarterback from Louisiana. He's been to Nebraska before as a fan. He grew up in a family of Husker fans. So there's obviously that history there, but this is his first visit as an offered prospect. You know, I think he was pretty blown away by everything. You know, he hadn't been to Memorial Stadium since the Wisconsin game in 2012, that of the Whataburger W Wisconsin jerseys and the big ugly Nebraska N on the chest. But was really impressed with what he saw. You know, really got a chance to be in Lincoln for a couple days and kind of get a lay of the land. He was at the baseball game on Friday because he's a dual sport guy, will play both in college. You know, a very good baseball player. I think that caught him by surprise more than actually the football side of things. I mean, that was his first baseball game at Haymarket Park. You had, you know, more than 5,000 people in there, and kind of made the comment that it was kind of similar to an SEC type atmosphere, which kind of caught him off guard. You know, what's next for him? I think, you know, a lot of people were assuming that it was going to be a done deal after this weekend, but the thing to remember with him, he hasn't made any visits since he's gotten all these offers. So he's got a stretch of trips set up in June. One of those will be, he says, back to Nebraska to meet the coaching staff in person, which he hasn't done yet. I think Nebraska's in a great spot. I also think that he's going to take his time. He's got some strong relationships with coaches at other schools that you know, are going to earn them visits. But it, for him, and I think a lot of quarterbacks, it's sometimes a matter of, you know, how long do you want to let things drag out? And I could see for him where it goes through the summer, he probably narrows things down. after those trips. And then, you know, once you get into the fall, maybe make a decision. But, you know, I think Nebraska is in a great spot again. You know, it's just going to be a matter of kind of letting that process play out and before he ultimately makes a decision. But I know he came away very impressed with everything he saw.
Yeah, and I think that the difficult thing is everybody wants these commitments right after this Saturday, and I think that Nebraska understands, and I think these recruits want the same thing. They want to see each other. They want to actually be able to interact in person. I know with some of the recruits, just being able to size them up in person is going to be a big deal. And so the other key is a lot of these guys are set to come back. I mean, they're going to be here in June, and I think that's important to note as well. So I mentioned Austin Terry. He's tight end out of Washington. Nebraska, I think, has a pretty good shot here, depending on what they want to do at the tight end position. He is a guy that can play inline, probably more of an inline, probably more like a Jack Stoll than he is like a Thomas Fedoni, if you will. But he's an intriguing guy. UCLA, Boise State, the other two teams to note there. He really liked the Nebraska visit. Came away pretty impressed by the facilities and the atmosphere that he was able to to kind of witness. And, you know, I think the other thing that stood out to him, and they didn't have a big day, but he liked that the tight end seemed to be pretty active in the offense, that Nebraska involves him. I know from talking with Sean Becton that he's come away pretty impressed with what Nebraska wants to do with their tight ends. And so I think that they have a pretty good sales pitch right now. And then certainly with Austin Allen and Travis Vokolek, you know, there's going to be an opening for opportunities. And we know Thomas Fedoni is going to be a guy to keep an eye on. But beyond that, you know, James Carney, A.J. Rollins, Chris Hickman, one of those guys have to step up, or it's going to be somebody in the upcoming recruiting classes. And of course, they have Ben Bramer already committed for 2023. So we'll see what direction Nebraska goes with tight end. I think they're going to take one for sure. They've got a couple different options, but I think Austin Terry is certainly a guy to keep an eye on there. And then Ernest Hausman, or Ernest Hemingway, as Jaron Kanick knows him as, for whatever reason. You know, he had a great time coming out, got to see everything, reinforced his decision. And like those other guys, he got to visualize what it would like to be with Nebraska. He said he didn't watch too much with a critical eye, and it was more so just being there for the experience. But I think the big takeaway for Hausman is that he's basically going to take up residency in Lincoln. He's going to be back almost every visit weekend. He plans on being at some of those camp events, even if he isn't working out. He wants to be around the staff a lot. He wants to be around the guys who are looking to make a decision or want to hang out with recruits that are going to be up there. So I think, again, I said it before, he's going to be a really valuable member for Nebraska, because their only other commitment, Victor Jones, I mean, he might come out in June or whatever, but he's in Orlando. So Hausman is going to be kind of the de facto guy in this class until it starts to build a little bit. And I think he's comfortable in that role. And I think he's good in that role. I don't know if you guys have talked to him yet or not, but he's a bright kid. He's very comfortable talking with people. And I think he's going to have a nice run of things with Nebraska's recruiting class this year. In a lot of ways, he kind of reminds me of a cross between a Michael Rose Ivy and a Garrett Nelson, someone that just has that kind of passion with Nebraska and isn't afraid to talk to guys about it. And so I think that that's going to be pretty helpful. We know that with this staff in particular, they really came to value what Garrett Nelson brought to them for that 2019 group. And I think Ernest Hausman can have a similar impact.
Has Ernest met the coaches in person?
No.
That's what
as far as I know that he hasn't, but basically, yeah, I mean, because his recruitment started in a dead period and his commitments in a dead period. So, you know, he's only interacted and he's done a lot of Zoom stuff with them, but I don't think he's been face to face with that staff yet.
Wild. What a wild year.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's tough. I feel for a lot of these kids. They're trying to do what's best for them. And it's hard because you have schools that want them to make quick decisions and sometimes uninformed decisions. And this visit period, Nebraska is already in the double digits of official visits, and they're expecting more. And it's going to be a pretty crazy month of June. So I would tell everybody, you know, enjoy the light days of May, because you're going to be strapped in if you really want to follow the recruiting coverage. And of course, we're going to have it for you here in Husker 24/7 and on our wonderful Husker 24/7 podcast. Do you guys have any thoughts on Brandon Hymus, Matt Farniok in Nebraska's NFL draft, and we can finish up with that.
I was surprised they got two drafted, but happy for Matt. I think Farniok, that's an example of a guy who he played every position in college, and we've seen it before with some former Huskers who are actually free agent guys like Searles, who can be a flip guy. You know, he could do some tackle, could do some guard. You know, Farniok even played center. And so I just think NFL teams look at a guy like that and say, let's give him a shot. Maybe he can be that. I'm not saying this is the ceiling for him, but even if you're like the last lineman on a 53-man roster, but you're the swing guy who can come in and give you depth, that's a pretty important job on a team. So I think that helped him get drafted. Hymus in the fifth round was about where I thought. Good team, though, with the Chargers. You know, he gets a block for a young quarterback. That's exciting. I mean, I think he's got to be happy as can be about where he landed.
Yeah, I was happy for Farniok. I mean, I was kind of like Brian. I expected it was going to be Hymus, and then, you know, the other guys were going to be kind of priority free agents. But, yeah, I mean, like a Brett Qualley, I mean, he's made a pretty nice career out of basically being the last lineman on the 53. And, you know, the fact that he has played center and guard and everything else will help him. I'm kind of eager to see, you know, a guy like Jack Stoll, if he can kind of catch on a practice squad. That's kind of what we've seen. I mean, Stephen Carter's done that with the Bengals, and, you know, turned that into a nice contract with the Dolphins. So, you know, it was kind of a low drama draft, I guess. I mean, you kind of had all three guys that weren't picked kind of get their free agency deals in line pretty quickly. And, you know, we'll see how they go from there, but, it was kind of cool too. I know it's kind of become a little trite with social media and everything, but it's pretty cool when you hear that phone call when they call guys and they're drafted, and just the unbridled emotion from those guys when it happened. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Put you guys on the spot. Does Nebraska have more than two drafted in the 2022 draft?
Yes.
Runs with a yes, BC with silence.
I was thinking about the roster and who's leaving, and we might not know yet. Yeah, I think so. Now, I mean, that's the big thing. Nebraska's got to get back into at least Friday. I mean, they've got to be a part of Friday, you know, because it's nice to get a couple guys picked the last day, but you've got to put your name out there on those first 2 days when it's a primetime event. And that's been the area where Nebraska has really slipped off the radar.
Is it true that Nebraska hasn't had a player taken in the first round on offense since 1996?
I'd have to look it up, but it's been pretty lean.
Because you have a bunch of second rounders in there. You have Amon Green, you have Amir Abdullah, you have Raiola, you have Finotti, I believe was a second rounder. But yeah, it's kind of amazing that a place that running backs and offensive linemen, and yet nobody since Lawrence Phillips in the first round.
That's correct. And since Phillips, there's been seven first rounders.
All defense.
The last one was Prince.
How many can you name, Brunts?
Well, I'm looking at it right now. So I'm kind
of BC, how many can you name?
Not a lot. Since Lawrence Phillips.
Yeah.
Grant Wistrom.
Mm-hmm.
Prince.
Yeah.
This is hard on the spot.
Come on, you know an easy one.
Sue.
Yeah.
Levante was not.
No.
Should have been. I could have told the draft guys that. And they would have saved him some.
This guy's now a media superstar.
Who?
One of them's now a media superstar.
It's not Will Compton, although he's kind of fun on Twitter. who are you talking about?
Adam Carriker.
Oh, okay. So that's four.
One guy ran in the 4.2s or 4.3s.
Went to the Raiders.
Fabian.
Yep.
Fabian Washington. That was that era where the Raiders took any guy like, oh, he's fast to get him pick seven. Like they would just take anybody who ran a four. Okay. What are the positions of the last two?
Corner and defensive tackle. One went to the Falcons and one went to the Carolina Panthers.
Michael Booker.
Mm-hmm.
Rucker?
Nope.
I mean, he's not a tackle, but Peter, I was
the other one.
Okay. Peter.
So essentially you have three defensive linemen and Wister and Peter and
four
character.
Before anybody's like, that guy doesn't know his Husker history, I was sort of like, my brain was having trouble computing, like, who was, like, in the post-96 and, like, pre, you know. But, yeah, Peter would have been obvious one. Booker. It would
be much harder if you were asked the second rounders since then because there was a lot.
Oh, yeah. When did Crick get picked?
Third round Texans or second round Texans.
Jared Crick had a really good college career.
I always refer to him as one of the most underrated Nebraska players because people always think of Sue, they think of Randy Gregory, they think of Levante David, and they do not think of Jared Crick.
That's too bad. He dominated that game in Waco, Texas one year.
Five and a half
when Sue was there. Also, in the 2010 Big 12 championship, which no one ever remembers because it didn't have a last second thing, he was unbelievable in that game against Oklahoma. But those are my thoughts on Jared. Jared Crick was really good.
Yeah, in 2010, he had 70 tackles, 14 and a half tackles for a loss, 9.5 sacks. So it wasn't just Sue.
When did Dejon Gomes get picked?
The Redskins or the Washington football team in like the sixth round?
Fifth.
That's my guess. Fifth?
Fifth.
All right, not bad. I'm just a round off on all of these.
Yep.
Dejon is probably my favorite Husker of the Pelini era. He was just such a ball hawk.
You should save that for when we're going to desperately need the content later.
All right. Sorry. Yeah, we can save that stuff.
We want to thank everyone for listening. Be sure to check out Husker 24/7. There should be plenty of post-spring recap and of course, recruiting content coming in. And then, you know, we'll dive into this, I'm sure, later in the week. But Nebraska baseball had a very rough weekend. They need to get right this weekend. They're in Piscataway, Brunts. Is that right?
Yeah, they got the New Jersey pod with Rutgers and first place Indiana. So it's a tough weekend.
Yeah, they gotta figure things out. And we'll discuss more of that. And Nebraska basketball got a commitment, too. But we'll save that for another show as well. So we will be back with more Husker 24/7 later this week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.